Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, what's the easiest way to find out what channel the game's on? Sports on What? Subscribe to the Sports on What app and quickly find the channel for every provider, satellite, cable, or streaming. Sports on What knows the channel the game is on, and you can too. Download today.
Unfortunately, what you're about to hear is real. The members of this radio program are simply not that bright, or what some people would call educated. They are merely stupid. They're not trying to offend anyone on purpose. And all have played doctors on TV. You have been warned and are cordially invited to join the party. This is the men's room.
Forget it, man, and get with the countdown. Get with the countdown. Shake this square world and blast off for Kicksville. Kicksville. The trippers, the grasshoppers, the hip ones, all gathered in secrecy and flying high as a kite.
This is the men's room with Miles and Thrill. You know what they say, shake your radio more than three times, and you're playing with it. You're listening to the men's room.
And away we go. Welcome to season 19, episode number 4176. Along with Steve the Thrill Hill, the Ted Smith, woo! And my car. Montgomery! And you are in the men's room. On tap today, once again, we play, sit and spin.
There it is.
And we'll mix it up today. 10 songs, if they were made by different artists.
Mm-hmm.
We will play Profile This. Plus headlines, men's room shot of the day, fun with listener emails, and everyone's favorite, TV Time with Tim.
Quack, quack.
Bring it the drive. All right, here we go. California Public Works Safety Crew is sorry that it sparked a 5,000-acre wildfire. To India, where fake doctor watching YouTube videos during surgery sounds like satire. Missing cat in Texas is found through a microchip 2,000 miles away. Meanwhile, a Florida dog missing for 2 years found in Oklahoma as a stray. And never good when another plane knocks off your plane's tail wing. That is all coming on today's very special episode of The Men's Room.
And now, here's the question.
Hola, bitches. Good day to you and yours. All right, he was Simba's father, Mufasa, in The Lion King. He was Luke Skywalker's father, Darth Vader, in Star Wars. He was Conan the Barbarian's father, one Thulsa Doom in Conan the Barbarian. And he was Prince Hakeem's father, King Joffer, in Coming to America. He was James Earl Jones. I do really feel like I should say he was James Earl Jones' bitch. I don't know why, but I feel compelled in that moment. Nevertheless, Jones passed away yesterday at the age of 93 from complications related to already having been alive for over nine decades. And in spite of a lengthy acting career that spans 70 years, Jones will always be best remembered for his awesome voice. But here's something you might not have known. To get where he got, the man with the, quote, golden voice, he had to overcome a severe stutter. Not bad for a guy regarded for his speaking gravitas. Go figure. But then again, theoretical physicist and all-around freaking genius Stephen Hawking. He was confined to a crumpled mass in a wheelchair after being diagnosed with motor neuron disease, and he did A-OK for himself. Actor R.J. Mitte, or is it Mitty? Most famous for his role as Walter White's son on Breaking Bad, his cerebral palsy. Elton John, he has epilepsy. Jennifer Aniston, Channing Tatum, Salma Hayek, Whoopi Goldberg, Tom Cruise, Cher, and Steven Spielberg, they all have severe dyslexia. And everyone mentioned here had to overcome an obstacle to get to where they are, but that's just part of the human spirit, right? Years ago, 13-year-old Bethany Hamilton, she had her leg bitten off by a shark while surfing. What did she do? Well, she bled a lot. And then she got back to competitive surfing. Or how about Chitale Dabi? That's the armless Paralympian who shoots bullseyes with her feet in archery. Today we're talking about conquering the disadvantage, whether it was medical, financial, abusive, addiction, bad education, where you were brought up, who the hell knows? Well, you do. But that leads to today's question. Today, we want to know, what have you had to overcome to get to where you are today?
To be a part of the Big Show, call 206-803-ROCK. Like the Men's Room on Facebook, follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Men's Room Live, and send those emails to...
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
The Men's Room at KISW.com.
Debauchery rolls on. You're listening to The Men's Room with Miles and Thrill. 99.9 KISW.
Overtones, away we go. Welcome to season 19, episode number 4176. What a large and in charge program we have for you today. Guaranteed future repeat. Once again, we're going to sit and spin, and we're going to mix things up with 10 songs if they were made by different artists. Now, Mike, truth be told, this is one dude who does this, correct?
For the most part, there's a couple of songs in there that are done by other groups. But yeah, for the most part, I think like 8 out of 10 of these songs are all done by a single guy.
That's what this guy does.
Give us an example of what we're going to be hearing.
So, for example, he would take a song like All Along the Watchtower, as played by Jimi Hendrix. Now, we know that that is a cover. However, he would do it in the style of Led Zeppelin. So he would have the guitar sound like Zeppelin, the drums would be very Zeppelin-esque, his singing would sound somewhat close to Robert Plant. Like, it's not going to sound right on there. He's not the man himself, but he's going to do his best to kind of emulate that, and he emulates the different styles of these different bands.
Okay. So we're going to get to guess the artist or guess the
correct
song.
So I would play you the clip, and it's clearly All Along the Watchtower. You guys have
we'll know the song, but we're guessing. Who,
you guys have to guess the, you know, who would be playing this in this iteration there.
All right. So, like, it would be Michael Jackson doing Whole Lot of Love.
There you go.
Right. Or something
exactly
like that.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Exactly. Because, right, you know, he's not Michael Jackson himself.
He gives it away. Yeah.
But everything that he put in there with the different backbeats and whatnot. That was
I want a whole lot of love.
Gotcha.
Somehow.
Exactly.
All right, so sit and spin 10 songs if they were made by different artists. Also today, some updated locations on the Men's Room IPA from Black Raven Brewing. If you are headed down to T-Mobile for the Padres as they are in town, as you say, Mariners maybe have a chance.
Maybe.
We will give you the locations where you can find the can and on draft. Coming up on the program, and also some updated locations for you as well. What else do we have for you today? We're going to talk about you overcoming things in your life. Now, as you said, Steve, based on if that's where you grew up, based on maybe a physical aspect that you needed to kind of work through.
Sure.
Could be a mental aspect. Could be something going on with, you know, the way your brain works. I know for a fact that my brain works in weird ways, always has, and there are certain things that I can do pretty easily. There are other things where I struggle, and I always have struggled with certain things, and I've done things over the years to try to kind of correct that problem. I had a real bad problem growing up trying to figure out math, and I don't know what the version of math dyslexia is, but I felt like I had it. For whatever reason, I just could not figure it out.
But I think a lot of people suffer with math. What I've found is that most people that suffer with math, it's just the way that it is taught versus your ability to understand. Because my kid used to tell me how bad he was and how much he hated math. And I said, you hate math class and the way they teach it. Now, they have a new modern system. And look, I'm just a caveman. The new system's kind of stupid to me. But that's how they have to present their work. So he would sit down and watch football with me, and I'd be like, okay, look at the score. Okay. What does this team have to do? And I mean, in a heartbeat. Well, they need at least two field goals, or they got to get the touchdown to get the extra point if they go up for 2 points. And so I said, dude, you do this insult. That is math. All you're doing is math. You don't hate math. You hate math class. And it's different there because the way they teach is an agreed-upon set of circumstances for how to present it, but that doesn't mean you'll understand. But the way football does it, you understand it in a heartbeat.
Absolutely. And there's all kinds of things that will help you. I do remember a couple things that that made math easier for me over time. Believe it or not, one was bowling. Bowling, for whatever reason. I know that sounds crazy.
Because you care. I mean, that's
back
the
thing. When
kids
day,
care, they learn.
Yeah, you had to, you know, you had a piece of paper that you wrote the scores down on. So, in a weird way, because I had to stay almost every day after school for a tutor just to be able to graduate high school as far as getting my math taken care of and getting those credits done. Then I get to college. It is the same thing over and over again. And my tutor said, look,
at that point in time, because when I was playing football, we had tutors for free.
Yeah.
And he said, I recommend you take two accounting classes. And I'm like, man, that sounds like a lot. He's like, listen, I think the way your brain works, you might not be able to figure out algebra and other things, but I think you'll be able to figure out accounting. So it's like, all right, man, I have to take these two electives anyway in this category. Accounting was in there. I took the first class, and I loved it. It all made sense as far as plugging things into formulas.
This is the big, and look, you know, if you're a teacher in school, you know you're up against the federal everything on how things need to be done. But also, teachers aren't stupid. They're just hamstrung. And the truth is, if kids care, kids learn. Think about it. Everybody hated reading because you made them read Shakespeare. And then when they read books they like, they have no problem reading. Every kid hates math up until they apply it to something that matters or makes sense to them. Then all of a sudden, like, your kid might be a freaking math genius. It's the struggle of getting through school, and teachers can't just break it down and say, look, F this, I'm going to make history class fun and tell it to you the way that your parents would tell you, I got to go through all this curriculum-based stuff, and if you don't care, you ain't going to learn it.
It gave me a bunch of confidence. So the first accounting class was just basic ledgers and all that stuff. The second accounting class, one of the assignments was, through the length of the class, that you were to create your own personal ledger, a.k.a. your own budget, just so you could see how much money you spent, whether it was on rent, whether it was on giving some money for the phone bill, all those different things. So I basically had a life ledger of all the places that I spent money. And it was an honest interpretation of that I turned in to my teacher, which was how much money I'd spent on marijuana.
Sure.
How much money I'd spent.
You put that in there?
Yeah, on beer. I'm not even 21. All these things were, you know, that's what the teacher said. I don't care how you spend your money.
Yeah, we're learning life now. I'm not here to judge.
If you spend your money, you need to write that down. That's all going to be part of this assignment.
Are you overspending on weed? That's when the teacher needs to get. If it's within your budget, I'm not going to ask any questions.
And you needed to break that down based on how you were trying to budget your money. So I broke it down Monday at Mondays. They had Long Island Iced Tea Night. For $1.50, you could get a Long Island Iced Tea.
Right.
That's where we went on Monday nights, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I put everything down in this ledger based on, and you had to write all that stuff down.
Yeah.
Why did you go here? What was the deal? How much did you spend total? What was dinner? How much did you spend on that? What did you eat? And for whatever reason, by the time I got done doing that class, I had enough confidence in my math ability to somehow pass my algebra class that I needed to, which...
Yeah, because math is math. There's no interpretation. Once you understand how it's not... That's the thing. It's the learning curve. It's not... They're stuck with the way they have to teach it in school. And like some kid, like my brother, he got it. He thought it was great. I did not get it because I did not care, and I didn't see where it would apply to my life. Then when you get a little older, and I'm working with my dad in the garage on some project he's doing, suddenly geometry made a lot more sense. Or it doesn't make sense when you just gave me these random letters and ask me what equals blah, blah, blah. But when you're actually building something, like, you need to understand what the F you're doing. And my dad was one of those guys, like, there is no room for error. So if I tell you to cut this thing and this is the length and it has to be at this angle, and I mean, and suddenly, like, geometry exploded in my head. I'm like, oh, when there's actually a practical use for this, you know, when you can physically do something, it makes a hell of a lot more sense. Then when you kind of write it up on a board, and I don't know what you do different because you got to write the stuff down on the blackboard. And then I'm going to explain to these kids that have never seen this before what I would like them to achieve with numbers. But if you, seriously, if you took a, what was it? The classes where you made crap.
Art class?
Not art class. What's the other one? A step up. You're working with tools.
Oh, home ec?
Shop. Thank you. Jesus, brain fart there. If you combine like geometry with shop class, I'm telling every kid would do considerably better.
Well, I'll tell you this.
I mean, look at radio, right? I just struggle with school, right? That's fine, right? Like, I went to summer school. I mean, I went to summer school every year so I could stay into math and graduate, right? I went to summer school when I was a kid. But when I got into radio, like, if most people saw what a radio board looks like,
you can freak out.
It is massively intimidating. But I'm just one of those people. I could touch it. I could put my hands on it.
Yeah.
I could watch somebody else do it. You could explain it to me. And it was super easy to pick up and learn.
So, I mean, I think application of the stuff that you're trying to teach kids, particularly when it's stuff with numbers and all that, right? It's not just reading. Reading is what it is. But with that, if you give them a physical application, they will understand what the hell it is.
And I don't know what the hell was with the West Virginia public school curriculum. I can imagine. But at the time, you took Algebra 1 first in high school.
Mm-hmm.
I struggle with that. The frustration, I mean, I almost cried as a 15-year-old. I was just like, I am so frustrated with this. The next class, then, was geometry. Now, geometry, I figured out. I could get geometry.
I'm with you. Geometry, I did pretty well.
Then algebra two. So it's the equivalent of, okay, you're going to learn Chinese, kid, 1 year. Next year, Spanish. Following year, advanced Chinese. So to me, it made no
sense. It's been that way forever.
It made no sense at all that, you know, you didn't piggyback off of what you just learned and roll that into the next class before, you know, I didn't understand the breakup because I almost had to relearn algebra again to try to start learning
algebra 2,
and in no way did geometry figure into the learning of algebra 2.
I don't understand it either. It is that way nationwide, or at least it was when I was in school as well. So if there's a math teacher out there that could at least explain to us why that is, because for a lot of us, algebra 1... Like you said, you might as well be teaching me Cantonese, right?
Why would you pause?
Well, I don't really understand this, and I'm pretty sure the grade I got at the end of Algebra 1 was a curve and a gimme from the teacher, because I passed with a 70. I don't remember ever getting a 70 on any test that I took. Right. I saw a lot of 60-somethings, but somehow I got a 70. So I know my teacher did me a solid. Thank you. Then geometry, which was a whole nother nightmare, but like you guys were saying, by the end of the year, I kind of picked up on that.
Right.
And then Algebra 2, and it's like, guys, seriously, man, like, you saw how bad I did the first time around. Then I got a year break. Why are we doing this again? And I really, to this day, I don't freaking understand it.
Well, Captain,
like, I'm already lost with the kids. The kids are in 7th and 8th grade now, and they come home with the math homework, and I'm like, guys, I told you this in 5th grade, that this is the last year Dad can help you with math.
So
I don't know.
At the beginning of your senior year.
So the math, you know, you go to a private school, it's a little different. So I took, like, classes that were a little bit slower, right?
Sure.
So I took Algebra 1, Part 1 for a year, Part 2 for a year, Geometry for a year. Then my senior year, I had Algebra 2. But, I mean, same thing. Me and my one buddy, Andrew, like, I remember, I mean, I had to recruit a girl that I had gone to grade school with who was a year older, who was already at Wake Forest, was home for the summer. This is right before high school graduation. I said, Shannon, you got to, like, cram with us. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, we must have spent 6 or 7 hours that day at his house. We end up just sneaking by and passing those exams. But you're right. It was tough.
So our senior year, Ted, they have a guidance counselor. Now, at the beginning of senior year, he would meet with you, and then halfway through the year, he would meet with you again.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so based on my math scores, and he was definitely somewhat of, there was a lot of autism going on there. He was a very good counselor, but he was just cut and dry.
But have they diagnosed it yet?
I'm not sure.
Because roughly the same age, man. Like, looking back, I can think of all the kids that were clearly autistic, but at the time, you were just weird or different. Even your teacher said that. Like, they're just weird.
But that was just where he was. He was just, I mean, it was just, I'm going to tell you like it is.
Yeah.
No bull crap. Here you go. Based on your grades, and I can look down and see, all right, so you're never going to be a doctor, okay? You can't be an engineer, civil engineer, any kind of engineer. You can't do any of that. Can't be a chemist. He would just go through the list. Yeah. Don't take any of these classes because you're not able to do any.
Yeah,
of
your
this
brain
stuff.
Isn't working for it.
No, it's not. And so it's just like you walk out of there like, well, I didn't know what I wanted to do, but now I don't really know what I can do. You know, like kind of like mess with your head. Wow, I can't do all the things that you can't be a lawyer, you can't be a banker, you can't
well,
be
looking back, do you feel bad about any of the things they said you can't do? I'm like, none of these are things
I... No, but
you know why I do poorly at this? Because I don't care. Mm-hmm. I mean, I hear what you're saying. I don't want to be a doctor. Yep. It doesn't look fun. I know they get paid, but beyond that, I don't want to do that.
Well, it's like I always tell a famous story, right? And I'm still friends with Mr. Golden to this day. Right, but after my freshman year, and frankly, some of the grades could have been better. That had nothing to do with having a learning disability. I just wasn't applying myself.
Yeah, you get lazy, sure.
But I used to say, what's your summer jobs? And I'm applying to pick up golf balls. He goes, Smitty, with these grades, I don't know that you're smart enough to pick up golf balls. Right? But you're right.
Thanks.
Like, at the top, but like, Thurl's right. He wasn't wrong. He was just trying to motivate. He's like, you can try harder than this.
Yeah,
that's all. Yeah, and you need someone to tell you that, man.
James Earl Jones.
Really and it's hard. Like, your parents, I get it. They struggle.
You're going to push back against your parents.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. And he was the defensive line coach, right? Like, I'm trying out the next year. I'm like, oh, man, he's right.
James Earl Jones, as you said, Steve, who passed away yesterday, one of the greatest, most admired American actors of all time. They say it was remarkable, his career, because he suffered from a debilitating stutter as a child. He grew grew up in Mississippi and raised by his grandparents. At age 5, the family moved to a farm in Michigan. And that move was traumatic somehow, he said. My ability to communicate dropped out. I could not speak to people without breaking up and stuttering. He pretended, actually, at the time to be mute.
Wow.
Or mute.
Mute is irrelevant.
When an English teacher in high school encouraged Jones to read a poem to the class that he had written, he discovered that his stutter vanished whenever he spoke words that he had memorized.
Uh-huh.
He won a public speaking contest as a senior and earned a full scholarship to the University of Michigan, where he studied medicine and then discovered acting. So our question, what have you had to overcome to get to where you are today? 206-803-ROCK.
99.9 KISW. The shenanigans continue. This is the Men's Room with Miles and Thrill.
At the Paralympics Games in Paris, and India claims a new shooting star. She is 17 years old. Her name is Sheetal Devi. And she is the youngest athlete in the women's para-archery event. Debbie has a condition called,
have fun with this.
Focomelia.
I'm going to pretend you said it right.
Focomelia.
Yeah, focomelia.
That causes the upper or lower limbs to be shortened or missing altogether. And she's just one of four armless archers at the Paris competition. The only female in that group. She also went
That's
viral.
That's her big claim to fame.
After hitting a bullseye right off the bat during the women's individual compound open event, Debbie can be seen after prepping her bow and arrow with her feet and mouth, taking her shot to the praise of the announcer, who exclaimed, "Oh, what a start." She did lose a round by just 1 point, ended up taking home the bronze, but her friends, old and new, went on to laud her for that bullseye. Poetry in motion. She basically is one of the best archers in the world.
Yeah.
And
period.
She does not have arms.
Right, right. Keep in mind, she's one of the best archers in the world, period. She just happens to not have arms.
Yeah, she is described as athletically gifted, someone who never let her limitations stop her from making the most of her childhood. Our question, what have you had to overcome to get to where you are today? 206-803-ROCK.
Hello, Raymond. Welcome to the men's room.
Marijuana and madams.
Hola.
Well, there's your answer.
Actually, let me start off with California sober for over 11 years now.
Oh, nice.
But before that, 32 years of alcohol and drug addiction.
Wait, how old are you? Because at 32, then it's been 11 years, so that has 43 years of life right there. How old are you? When did you start doing drugs?
I am 55, and I started when I was 12.
Wow, man.
What did you, smoking weed or cigarettes or what?
Cigarettes, weed, then we got into, like, you guys will remember, cross tops and pink hearts.
Yep. Oh, we remember well. In fact, we may have been disappointed when they stopped selling them at convenience stores. May have.
I agree 100%.
Yeah. Seriously, there was like three athletes that dropped like flies over 2 years.
Yeah. It was mostly in the summer.
That basically took it off the shelf.
But I'm not athletic.
Well, it's also
just speed. Right?
It's a bronchodilator. Oh, it's Evertrin. Yeah.
But speed, yes.
Well, they took Evertrin out of everything, right?
I know. Yeah, they did. They did. So, all right. So then, what did you move on to from there?
Then I went. I kind of started everything at 12 with amphetamines, and then it just kept on doing that stuff. I never did like any heroin or anything like that. I was an upper guy.
Right. Oh, no, I get it, man. I've done a lot of drugs, but for whatever reason, stuff like heroin and meth, I'm like, nope. I put a lot of crap in my body. I just won't do those.
Did you do okay in school?
Yeah. I did until about my sophomore year, and then it was just more fun to skip.
All right, and I assume that you're skipping and drinking and doing drugs and having sex and all the good stuff, right?
Absolutely. Partying, going to the park, and just hanging out.
And what did you do to make money once you hit adulthood? So 18 to, say, 33 or whatever.
Oh, I've always had a job. I was very functioning if there is functioning, but I could hold a job and stuff up until I was about 40, and then things just started going down.
Wow. All right, so what happened at 40 that you started making a decision, maybe I need to clean up?
I tried many times, and things weren't going right, and then it got to be like 43, and I was living up here. And the streets of Seattle ain't a very nice place to be living.
No. So what was your biggest crutch at that age? Alcohol? Was it, still
alcohol,
drug use?
Alcohol and methamphetamine.
All right. And what did you do to get clean? I mean, did you physically go somewhere? How long did it take for you to get over the mental hump?
I spent a year in Seattle Union Gospel Mission.
Oh, wow.
And that helped, obviously.
Oh, yeah. I haven't touched any alcohol. The only thing I've touched since then is my weed.
All right.
Okay. What about, is meth that, as addictive, or is it just the feeling's awesome and it's so cheap?
Both, because you seem to get a lot done. And I know somebody has said this on the program before, but I was doing it back in the 80s a lot when the meth was good.
When it was clean.
Yeah, when it was clean. Good. Yeah.
We have our today. 206-803-ROCK.
99.9 KISW. The shenanigans continue. This is the Men's Room with Miles and Thrill.
At the Paralympics Games in Paris, and India claims a new shooting star. She is 17 years old. Her name is Sheetal Devi, and she is the youngest athlete in the women's para-archery event. Devi has a condition called,
have fun with this,
focomelia.
I'm going to pretend you said it right.
Focomelia.
Yeah, focomelia.
That causes the upper or lower limbs to be shortened or missing altogether. And she's just one of four armless archers at the Paris competition. The only female in that group. She also went
viral.
That's
her big claim to fame.
After hitting a bullseye right off the bat during the women's individual compound open event, Devi can be seen after prepping her bow and arrow with her feet and mouth, taking her shot to the praise of the announcer, who exclaimed, "Oh, what a start." She did lose a round by just one point, ended up taking home the bronze, but her friends, old and new, went on to laud her for that bullseye. Poetry in motion. She basically is one of the best archers in the world.
Yeah.
And period. She does not have arms.
Right, right. Keep in mind, she's one of the best archers in the world, period. She just happens to not have arms.
Yeah, she is described as athletically gifted, someone who never let her limitations stop her from making the most of her childhood. Our question, what have you had to overcome to get to where you are today? 206-803-ROCK.
Hello, Raymond. Welcome to the men's room.
Marijuana and madams.
Hola.
Well, there's your answer.
Actually, let me start off in California sober for over 11 years now.
Oh, nice.
But before that, 32 years of alcohol and drug addiction.
Wait, how old are you? Because of 32, then it's been 11 years, so that has 43 years of life right there. How old are you? When did you start doing drugs?
I am 55, and I started when I was 12.
Wow, man.
What did you, smoking weed or cigarettes or what?
Cigarettes, weed, then we got into, you guys will remember, cross tops and pink hearts.
Yep. Oh, we remember well. In fact, we may have been disappointed when they stopped selling them at convenience stores. May have.
I agree 100%.
Yeah. Seriously, there was three athletes that dropped like flies over 2 years.
Yeah. It was mostly in the summer.
That basically took it off the shelf.
But I'm not athletic.
Well, it's also
just speed. Right?
It's a bronchodilator.
Oh,
it's
effigy. Yeah. But speed, yes.
They took effigy out of everything, right?
I know. Yeah, mm-hmm. They did. All right. So then, what did you move on to from there?
Then I went. I kind of started everything at 12 with amphetamines, and then it just kept on doing that stuff. I never did any heroin or anything like that. I was an upper guy.
Oh, right. No, I get it, man. I've done a lot of drugs, but for whatever reason, stuff like heroin and meth, I'm like, nope. I put a lot of crap in my body. I just won't do those.
Did you do okay in school?
I did until about my sophomore year, and then it was just more fun to skip.
All right. And I assumed you're skipping and drinking and doing drugs and having sex and all the good stuff, right?
Absolutely. Partying, going to the park, and just hanging out.
And what did you do to make money once you hit adulthood? So 18 to, say, 33 or whatever.
Oh, I've always had a job. I was very functioning if there is functioning, but I could hold a job and stuff up until I was about 40, and then things just started going down.
Wow. All right, so what happened at 40 that you started making a decision, maybe I need to clean up?
Just, I've tried many times, and things weren't going right, and then it got to be 43, and I was living up here. And the streets of Seattle ain't a very nice place to be living.
No. So what was your biggest crutch at that age? Alcohol? Was it, still drug use?
Alcohol and methamphetamine.
All right. And what did you do to get clean? I mean, did you physically go somewhere? How long did it take for you to get over the mental hump?
I spent a year in Seattle Union Gospel Mission.
Oh, wow.
And that helped, obviously.
Oh, yeah, I haven't touched any alcohol. The only thing I've touched since then is my weed.
All right.
Okay. What about, is meth that, as addictive, or is it just the feeling's awesome and it's so cheap?
Both, because you seem to get a lot done. And I know somebody has said this on the program before, but I was doing it good back in the 80s a lot when the meth was good.
When it was clean.
Yeah, when it was clean, good. Yeah. We have had people say
when that. The meth was good.
Yeah, didn't have none of that cut stuff in it.
Oh, no, I mean, it makes sense. Like, coke was pure, heroin was pure. You know, but like anything, you find a way to stretch your product to make more money. So yeah. Not that meth was ever good for you, but believe it or not, it is worse for you now.
Well, and methamphetamine, I mean, I'm sure he can attest to, I live back, we grew up back east. You never heard of meth, but it was massive out here in, the Northwest and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as getting stuff done, I mean, you're not wrong. One of the things with meth was, World War II? Hitler giving it to his soldiers for the Blitzkrieg.
Is because they're all methamphetamines.
I mean, so these guys, I mean, they're quote-unquote getting stuff done at a real rapid pace.
I can sum this all up for you in two words.
Okay.
Klamath Falls.
Yep, I know.
Here we go again. Here we go.
It never disappoints.
Yeah. Well, congratulations, man, on kicking that.
Thanks, brothers. I appreciate you guys, man.
Yeah, that's impressive. I mean, I still struggle with cigarettes.
I definitely struggle with cigarettes, but 12 years old, man.
It's early to be running.
And maybe it's not now. I don't know. I hope it is, because now I'm thinking my son's 12. He doesn't give any indication that he wants to smoke weed or power down booze. In fact, he had a sip of my beer in Delaware, and he just looks at me and shakes his head like, I don't know how you like this stuff. And I said, man, I'm going to be dead honest with you, okay? Pop, his grandfather. I said, I had the same experience with him, about the same age. Granted, it was a Budweiser, so I'm not wrong about that part, but I said, this is awful. I will never drink this. And he goes, what did Pop do? I said, Pop laughed for 5 minutes, to the point he was almost wheezing, and just said, okay, we'll see about that. That was a whole conversation.
And I mean, even when we started, that's probably, 13, 14, somewhere in there, 15, you spend the night at somebody's house. But, you're right, it was never beer. Somebody would be like, I suck a bottle of whiskey out of my dad's liquor cabinet. And we'd try that and be like, it's awful. But
something like
you'd
peach,
get a buzz. But, yeah. Peach schnapps.
Because it doesn't taste bad, right? And you still have these virgin taste buds. You kind of like that you're getting drunk. You don't like how you feel the next day. But, look, to me, stuff sold in plastic bottles that comes in a flavor is typically more of a gateway than beer or whiskey.
What scared the hell out of me, man, as far as alcohol goes, was the adults that I was around. So, me and my buddies, we, 4th of July, whatever, family events, whatever, it's cousins, all these people. You would see, couples get into fights. I mean, not physical fights, just screaming at each other. Somebody's drunk, someone's throwing up. And we just thought to ourselves, do we want to become these people as adults? And that was honest to God. Me and my buddy Brian, his parents would get absolutely hammered. I've seen my mother hammered, throwing plates, just stupid stuff. And we just kind of made this pact, let's just promise ourselves that we won't become full-blown alcoholics when we go to college.
You end up like that, yeah.
And then we got to 18 years old and went off to college, and all that went out the window.
And it goes out the window, but you're still not those people.
Yes.
One of the kids, their particular class, all of us as parents get along, so we run pretty deep, and the kids love it. They'll all come to our house. All the kids race around, act like fools. They get their ground rules, right? But all of us, we're just sitting outside, and we are drinking. I mean, it is whiskey. It is beer. The ladies are drinking wine or whatever vodka concoction they've come up with. There's always something new in a pitcher, right? But no one's angry. We're just in really good moods. And the kids have figured out, hey, when the parents are sitting around just doing their thing, and their thing seems to involve whatever it is they're drinking, they're in real good moods and, they leave us alone.
Right.
So that's one thing we discovered. So we might be sending the wrong message to our kids. They're like, I want to do that.
These dudes, they would pound, 12 packs of Iron City beer.
Yeah.
Which is the popular, or Rolling Rock, the popular beer in the area. The women were on the wine tip. They were
always.
But man, the guys were just chill, hanging out, crushing beers, but they were never just they never got out of control. But when the women got drunk on the wine, then it all just started to roll downhill. Like, it almost just seemed like you just made your husband more drunk than he was. You know, we just, they're like, what is going on? Like, you know, people are leaving, going home, like, well, I'm going to leave, and well, you're not taking the car, and blah, 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 blah. They'd be out in the park, you know, on the freaking driveway going at each other, and just like, we're just like, what just happened?
Right.
What is going on?
Weren't you just having fun?
And my family, like, my one uncle, he's a pretty good beer drinker, but like, my dad, and he stopped drinking, but if there was a family incident, he was still dead center of it. like that's what, like, it was like, I don't, like, because, you know, there's, like, two ways of doing stuff, right? Like, a lot of people, if they have, you know, addiction problems, will go get treatment, but they'll go get treatment.
Yeah.
And my dad just kind of stopped drinking, but it's like, it didn't really, I don't think he ever went and worked on why he had such a hot temper and would scream at people.
Right,
so
he just quit the
like,
drinking.
I don't, he'd always tell these stories. I'm like, I remember him once being drunk, but, like, me and my brother would joke about it, like, you know, he's gone now. I'm like, I'm not sure the beer was the problem. We're a super angry dude.
What have you had to overcome to get to where you are today? 206-803-ROCK.
Hello, Tim. Welcome to the men's room.
Hola.
Hola.
So, when I was a kid, my whole life I struggled in school. I had major ADD and I could never focus.
Now, did you know you had ADD, or is this one of those deals where it's undiagnosed?
It was undiagnosed. I mean, you don't learn that until, well, I'm in my early, mid-60s, and you never hear that
crap.
Yeah,
there's no way you knew. No way you knew, sure.
No, but I know now because I had one of my kids got it, and they said, well, they got to inherit it from somebody, and I was tested probably about 25 years ago, and they determined I had ADD. So I'm assuming that's what affected me when I was a kid. Anyway, so I always had problems in school. I couldn't focus. You know, the teacher would be talking. I'd get asked a question, and I wouldn't even know what the question was because I was staring out the window or busy, you know, talking to one of my buddies, whatever it may be. There was a time in high school where a teacher made me stand up in class, and they said, you know, everybody take a look at Mr. Weber here, because you see him today, you won't see him tomorrow, because I was notorious for cutting school. You know, and I was told at one point I was going to be the least likely to succeed after I left high school. And so I always had troubles in high school, junior high, grade school, yada yada. I don't even know how I graduated, but I did. And the only classes I did well in were like auto shop, wood shop, metal shop, etc. And, you know, it's just unfortunate. One of the things that's unfortunate for kids, well, maybe they're getting more of a clue today, but, you know, everybody was cookie cutter back in the day. And, you know, if you had a learning disability, they didn't recognize it. You're just stupid to people, right?
Yeah, you were the dumb kid in the class. The teachers would say it. The principal would say it. It didn't mean anyone even made fun of you. It was just, oh, he's the idiot.
Did you have that thing where you would read a page out of a book that you're supposed to read, and you would read it, but you did not pick up any of that information and stayed in your brain? So you had to start all the way over and read the page again, because even though you were reading it, you weren't putting that information.
Right, you didn't retain it.
It wasn't sticking, you know? Like,
absolutely. Even to this day, I mean, I could probably count three books that I can remember reading up to this day. Because I mean, books put me to sleep. You know, you give me a book, I go to sleep, unless it's something extremely, something I'm into. You know, it has to be something I'm really into, otherwise forget it.
But I think that's fair of all people. Because look, man, in school they make you read stuff. You might like a book or two that they assign you to read, but overwhelmingly the kids hate the books. I don't know a single adult.
Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Sure, but yeah. I mean, I don't know I don't know a single adult who will buy a book that he doesn't want to read. Like that only happens. So if I read a book now, I guarantee you, I'm interested in the book. I'm the one who bought it. What I mean. So I don't hate reading now. I hated reading in school. Yeah. And you realize it's not reading. You just don't want to read this.
It's kind of like if I assigned you a movie to watch, right?
Right.
I'm gonna pick the worst movie that I can find, because if I have to make you watch a movie just to be funny, I'm going to give you something that's awful.
Yeah.
And that's basically what it was in school. Like, I don't want to read Jane Eyre.
Jane Eyre, all the shit. And it's like, look, if you want kids to read Shakespeare because you're going to have to hear about Shakespeare the rest of your freaking life, whether you want to or not, fine. But they'd make you read like three or four. And it's like, dude, we got it after the first one. We get it. We understand what he is laying down. But to his point, you know, now, just looking at my kids' school, if there's 24 kids per class, 12 of them have something. It can be ADD, ADHD, it can be a learning disability, it can be an autistic spectrum, you name it. But percentage-wise, just no different than any of the kids that we went to school with.
No, but it's just, at least the teacher now, understands.
But it's diagnosed. So I almost think it might be harder for teachers now in the sense of, look, Billy's not stupid. Billy has blank, right? But now you have to pay attention to that, and you need to accommodate for that, which is good of them to do that. As we were teaching 30 years ago, Billy's just a moron. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It was just, we don't like Billy. Billy doesn't pay attention. Kick him out of class. Whatever you got to do. But now, I mean, kids are diagnosed with every freaking thing on earth, and it's like they all get a there's one special attachment they'll kind of make. Like, this kid needs an extra day to do homework or more time to finish classwork because they have blank. Where when we were going to school, there's like, Billy, you're lazy. Everyone else is done. You know, so I am very glad that they can actually diagnose this stuff now and go like, look, man, this is what's going on with the kid. They're not being disrespectful. They don't hate you. They're not disrupting class just to be an a-hole. Now, make no mistake. A lot of kids are that. They are stupid, and they are just disruptive to be disruptive. But 9 times out of 10, like, they've been medically diagnosed with something. So at least, you know, you can help them to help themselves as they go through school.
Yeah, like untimed test.
Yeah, exactly. There's a couple of kids that get that. My daughter gets that now.
Yeah. Like, when I got to high school, I got diagnosed, then I could start doing that, and it was a lot easier.
Yeah, my daughter got diagnosed, and I'm like, okay, that explains a lot of things, but there's these little accommodations that she has in school. And I'm just thinking, man, if you were my age, just
put the pencil down!
Put it down!
Time's up! Put the pencil down!
I'm taking 10 points off your test because the pencil... I mean, like,
are you chewing gum? Did you just get a sip of water? You know the rules. No water, pencil down. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, that is how it was run,
Jesus,
man.
Jesus, God. What have you had to overcome to get where you are today? 206-803-ROCK. Like, that makes sense.
I was standardized testing. Sucked.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Jesus.
I'm saying, put the pencils down. You put them down. It must be a number two.
Did
pencil.
You write down another answer over there?
Well, remember, too, they were very strict, right, for the standardized testing. Like, it was like you couldn't leave the classroom during them.
Correct.
Right? Like, you had to use the bathroom beforehand and blah, blah, blah. So I remember one time, and like, look, I don't care who you are. I was a good kid, but there's always going to be teachers, whatever, you don't get along with. So this one guy, I never had him for class. We just didn't get along. So we're taking the standardized testing, right? I asked to leave. He's like, you can't leave. I said, all right. So I had to blow my nose. And then, like, now I just got this tissue full of boogers, right? So there's like a, you know, like the rack underneath that you would put your books on.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? You got to keep in mind, I'm like a sophomore junior, so I'm already like almost 300 pounds. So I barely fit in these desks. So, but he's like, no, you can't get up. I said, okay. So I try to kind of balance that tissue on the book rack. Obviously, at some point, he falls off, and I'll never forget, he walks by and goes, so we're just leaving trash on the floor? And it's like, hey, man, like, all I wanted to do was throw out this tissue. You wouldn't let me. Like, what was I supposed to do with it?
It's got 8 pounds of mucus in it,
but
man.
You're right. It's kind of that old school teaching way of just like, well, this. I like that. Okay. I mean, not the biggest deal, but I still remember that. Like, how am I in trouble? You wouldn't let me throw it away.
Do you want to throw it away for
right,
me?
Time's up. I think even then I probably said something like, well, I was going to pick it up.
Mm-hmm. What have you had to overcome to get you where you are today? 206-803-ROCK.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated. Where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.